morning, everybody, and welcome to Daybreak. I am Mark Coxon, and as always, I'm here with my host, Jared Hellman.
Live in the newfound winter wonderland.
what's been going on up there, up in the Great White North?
We were clearing out snow, things were looking positive, and then we just got dumped on again last night with some heavy snow, so spend my morning shoveling that out. Hey, that, actually, while I was shoveling snow, don't ask me why I was thinking about this, but as I was shoveling snow, as I was donning my jacket and then my mittens, I thought to myself, does Mark Coxon own a pair of winter mitts? And if so, why would he? Unless he skis. So I wanted to ask you, do you own a pair of winter mitts?
So I do. I will tell you, I haven't seen them in probably 9 years, and right. and we just discussed potentially driving, you know, an hour and a half this weekend to Wrightwood, which is like kind of underneath Big Bear here in California.
Sure.
Which is a place that we can go sled. I will tell you that I did do the snow to ocean. The time I did wear the winter mitts in California was that 9 years ago. We went sledding. And then we jumped out of there into Malibu and ate grilled fish on the ocean that night. So we went from sledding to sitting on the Weird. Ocean
eating fish. And when you say sledding, like, you mean like tobogganing, or do you mean like skidoo?
No, I mean like tobogganing. And you know what's funny is, Jared, you're one of the few people that I know that refer to it as tobogganing. And my mom did too as a kid, but a toboggan can also be a hat, right? Like one of those, like a beanie.
What?
That's what she called a toboggan.
She'd say, Mark, don your toboggan.
Yes. Which was funny because I got lost one time. I went down to the store by myself and my mom was calling the cops because she was trying to find me. And they were like, well, what does he look like? And she's like, well, you know, he's a blonde kid, but he has a toboggan on his head. And the police were very confused about this description of this young boy wearing a toboggan on his head. And they didn't actually know what she was trying to say. And at one point they were like, well, we got this little kid here, but we don't know what color his hair is because he won't let us take his hat off. But yes, my mom used to call a beanie, a toboggan, which I found out later was not an appropriate term for what a beanie is.
Not a toque.
No, not a toque.
Yeah.
Not a toque.
So you do own a pair of winter mitts, but they are for show only.
Yes, they're in the garage somewhere in a box. Yes, with a bib.
Labeled ski gear.
Yes, probably, actually.
Ski gear. And emergencies.
It's like one of those Texas
ski gear and Texas emergencies.
Exactly. I thought about sending it out to Houston just for those folks out there. You know, put it on a boat, send it that way. Well, hey, I'm glad you're safe.
Yes.
I'm glad you shoveled out and you were able to make it this morning. You know, we have a guest this morning.
Haven't had one in a while.
Somebody agreed to come on the show.
Yep.
Which is always a huge surprise. But I was on LinkedIn yesterday and I ran across an article that a friend of ours, I think, Derek Kelly shared.
Yes.
And so I asked Derek if he'd like to come on because I thought the article was something that was kind of up the alley of the show and you specifically, actually, Jared. So why don't we call him? Without further ado, I mean, he's got a hard stop today. He's got work to do, so we better get him on here.
Get him on. Call him up.
All right. Hold on 1 second. Derek.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Good morning, Derek.
How are you? Good morning.
Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on the show. For people who don't know Derek, Derek Kelly is with AVISPL now, because AVISPL and Whitlock are now one. You know, an integrator leaves an integrator, and clings to another, and they become one. I think it's biblical.
That's a biological statement.
So Derek is the director of solutions enablement, which honestly for this call is here nor there, but he's, you know, Derek is a very process oriented. He used to be director of technical service operations. But the thing I like about Derek is he's always thinking about business and not, not so much from an AV perspective, which I'm sure he does on a day in and day out business, but but most of the things that Derek shares and talks about seem to be around, you know, team building and eliminating bias and personal development. What got you pointed in that direction, Derek?
Honestly, approaching, you know, management, because I got put in some management roles, and when I got put in them, a person of, you know, what am I looking to be as a manager? And so in a lot of cases, what wound up happening is I kind of approached it as my own development, just like I would, you know, get training and certification on, you know, the latest technology XYZ, you know, thing. I took a serious look at approaching it like that, because people were relying on me. People were relying on me to make the right decisions, to help them and help our company and help our customers and everything else like that. And if I didn't take it as seriously as I took my own personal technical development, then there was probably going to be problems. Yeah. And I didn't want to be the cause of that. So not saying that there haven't been problems or issues that have shown up that have gone well beyond what I was prepared for from management or leadership in any way, shape, or form. But the idea of investing just as much time in that growth as you know, technical and professional growth specific to a role.
Yeah. No, I think that's really great. I mean, I'll tell you, you know, me in my current role, I really feel like those are the skills that I needed to hone and develop a lot more too. You know, we get really, I think a lot of times in any industry, really, you know, it's kind of that Peter principle, or that weird, assumption that because you're good at your job, you'll be a great manager for other people that do your job. And that's not always the case, unfortunately.
No. And it gets hard too. Like if you came up in an engineering role and you become an engineering manager, it is hard to take off that engineering hat because you're still kind of doing engineering, yeah. You know, but you're not, you know, you can't do it for the people that you're managing. So even if they may not make the choices that you would make as an engineer, you have to take a step back and understand that, like, maybe their choice is still a good choice. It's just not the choice you would make. And so then you have to kind of step back and go, I'm going to let them make this choice and see where it goes, even if it's not your preference, or even if you see potential problems in the future. You have to kind of have, you know, understand that they're not coming to you for engineering advice unless they specifically ask for that. Generally, they're coming to you because they need a manager, you know, or a leader on something.
Yeah.
I find that that's like the biggest difference sometimes between, like, you know, leadership and management versus you know, your employee. Or it's one is task oriented and one is goal oriented. And that's really like the hat you're taking off is like, okay, I'm not going to pick apart the way you're doing something because I would do that task differently.
Yep.
However, I am going to point you in the direction of what needs to be, what the outcome is. So however you get there, you know, detrimental damage to the company aside,
yeah.
However you get there, that's the goal. That's the mission, right? So I think, yeah, that's one of the most, that's one of the hardest things for people to do.
Well, and then on top of that, understanding too that people are at different parts of their development and growth and learning process. So you can't necessarily do it for them.
Right.
If them getting to this conclusion, you know, requires them to learn something to get to that conclusion, because then you have to kind of walk them to the point and say, okay, this is what the expectation is. And even if they go down a path and, you know, potentially may even cause a problem, you have to understand what that calculated risk is with each individual. And it's an individual basis. It is not a blanket, here's the engineering department or here's the project management department. They all have to adhere to X, Y, Z. Everybody's different and everybody needs different things from not only a manager and leader, but also from their own development. You know, some people get certain things immediately and some of them you have to, you know, work with them for a long time before it starts clicking in.
Yeah, it is such a hard thing. I went to a management training once where they called that champion mode, you know, where you go back into your hero role of doing what you had done before and to get you noticed on the promotion track. And you kind of go back into this champion mode. One of the books I read a long time ago was called Tell to Win. It was by Peter Gruber, who was at Sony Pictures. And the reason I bring it up, which is very interesting, is he was talking about when he became the head of Sony Pictures, one of the studio execs gave him a piece of advice. And he said, you know, a lot of people are going to come into your office with problems. And he said, what I want you to do is I want you to envision that, I think Jared knows where I'm going with this. I want you to envision that they have just brought a monkey with them into your office. And he goes, and they're going to try to leave it there. He's like, your job is to make sure they take the monkey with them when they leave, right? Like your job is to give them the advice, point them in the right direction, but the problem is their problem to solve. The task is their task to do. They take it with them when they go. They're not there to vent, drop the problem in your lap and then go on with the rest of their day. So
you've got to build resiliency amongst your team, because they have to be able to solve problems and solve problems that have never shown up before. And you know, and that's the one of the hardest skill sets to build with people, because they don't want to build it. You know, very few people want to build troubleshooting skill sets, because that means you're going to go through some pain for a little bit of time to really figure this stuff out. People are fine with troubleshooting a technical system because there's an expected end result. There's an expected steps, processes, everything else like that. But if you're talking about how you get, say, the right pricing for something, or how you get a manufacturer to help you with something or anything else like that, that's a kind of a nebulous little world right there that you can't just tell people, oh, go do this, talk to this person, get this done type scenario. They have to figure out how they find what it is, or finding documentation. You know, some of our manufacturers are fantastic. Some of them absolutely are terrible at providing information, and you've got to go on a hunt. And some people just give up and say, well, I can't figure it out, so somebody's just going to have to give it to me. That's not the answer, you know, because that just breeds laziness, to be honest. And you have to kind of push them to find it and continue to find it. And it's going to be hard and painful in some cases, but they have to go through that pain. And that's where you have to find the right ways to motivate people, because nobody wants to go through painful things. They just want to be able to kind of do stuff. But again, like the cliched saying of if it was easy, everyone would be doing it, is exactly right for that reason. Because some of the hardest things are some of the things that don't have a pathway right in front of them.
Yeah, I remember a job interview. It was actually a job interview I had with Tangram a long time ago. So I originally almost went to work for Tangram in 2013. And it didn't happen until about 6-7 years later. But I remember that first meeting I had, and I had a meeting with the CEO of the company, one of the two owners. And when leaving that interview, he asked me for like three different things. One was my thoughts on a new product that was being released. He wanted me to write those down and send them to him. And the second were two meetings he wanted me to have with other people that weren't within his organization. They were people that he kind of were in his peer network, other business owners in peripheral industries, and he just wanted to know what their impression of me was. So he's like, hey, can you give me take a look at this and let me know what you think of this product, and meet with this guy, Steve, and this guy, Bob, and then, and then let's get back together. And that was the end. Like, it wasn't, here's Steve's info, here's how you get in contact with him, let me send a warm email and get the two of you in touch with each other. It was, you know, I literally had to figure out, like, where do they work? Like, who, you know, where, what's their contact info? How do I get in touch with them? Then I had to reach out and say, hey, so-and-so asked me to have a meeting with you. I'm hoping to set that up. I mean, all the things, the funny thing is, you know, in retrospect, those are all the things you do in the role that I would have been in, the business development manager or whatever, is that, you know, sometimes there are pieces of the puzzle that are handed to you and your job is to fill in the gaps. And how good are you at filling in, you know, all of those gaps? And so, you know, in retrospect, I thought it was pretty genius. It, leaving the meeting, I was sitting there going, okay, well, I guess that's all on me to do, right? Like,
yep.
You know, you're used to being spoon-fed, but I thought it was a great technique, you know?
That goes to the conversations about, you know, AV as an industry, and even IT as an industry, there's boxes that you're checking. Because, hey, this person has this certification, they've done this job for X number of years, and they have these qualifications. Okay, I'm going to interview this person. That doesn't produce the best results long-term because you don't know why they're available. First and foremost, they may be available for any number of reasons. And then secondly, you have to build a diverse set inside of your organization of what you can do and can't do and everything else like that. So, I mean, those are the types of things that too many technology companies get caught up in, is just checking boxes of what people have, what they've experienced, what job roles they've had specifically, without looking at tangential and, you know, similar skill sets and similar building skill sets to what you're trying to actually accomplish in roles and structure. There are plenty of people that have fantastic skill sets that if you just give them the chance and give them a few kind of directions and coaching and sort of even training certification paths may wind up being the best people to work for you, because they thought they were going to be stuck in a role and they were going to be stuck, some project administrators and sales administrators have some fantastic skill sets if you just give them the right push in the right directions, but everybody just assumes they're just going to be an administrator forever. And so you get stuck, you know?
Yeah, like what I would say is that it's not the skill set that those people have, it's the mindset, right? Mm-hmm. And that's going back to kind of what you brought up there, Derek, is that what you're doing, there's teaching and training people to do a specific task and a specific skill. And there's very minimal failure risk in that. And that's why people want you just to show them how to do it. Those types of people. And what you're looking for is a manager that's willing to say, no, go fail. Like, go, this is the outcome. Go and find Steve and Bob, fail. And you'll learn. And you want that growth mindset, everyone calls it. Like, it's more advantageous to teach people how to grow than it is to teach them how to do a task. And so you're 100% right. Like, even, I don't know if you've ever read like Good to Great with Jim Collins, but his whole thing is like, no, get all your right people on the bus. It doesn't even matter what you're going to do, because if you have the right people, you'll be able to stand in front and say, okay, guys, this is where we're going with our bus. Who's with me? And you'll have all those right people. And then you can teach those kind of skill sets. So yeah, growth.
Yeah. There's so much focus on whatever the current trend is in whatever technology world you're in, of making sure that you have the skill sets to deliver whatever that trend is. Where you have the longest and best results over a much longer period of time is building around what's not going to change, because stuff's going to always change. Technology is always going to change. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's not going to change. The things that aren't going to change are things like, how do I make the process of working with my company easier? You know, so how can I accept better payments better? How can I quote quicker? How can I get through the process of design in a way that we still are allowed to take the time that we need to design properly, but without making the customer feel like we're taking forever to turn around a design? Build in those. That's the stuff you work on. That's the stuff you build around, is because that stuff's not going to change. There's no way in 10 years customers are going to go, you know what? I want it to cost 10 times more than what it costs right now. I want it to be slower, and I want you to have all these process steps in place to make sure that yes, you're covering every single possible instance of every possible thing that could happen. Nobody wants that. What they want is cheaper, faster, better, you know? And so how do you get there? You know,
what's funny is in that in the specific article that you shared that kind of is stemming all this, actually, I caught a line there, and it says, what corporate learning programs teach is also misguided. The pace of change has outpaced the creation of training content. Mm-hmm. That things are changing so fast that you can't even keep up with, and I'm assuming that they're referring to the actual like technicality of, you know, skill set and what's out there. Whereas if you can train and you can teach that critical thinking, that self-development, that self-study, that purpose-driven, goal-driven mindset, well, you'll overcome the change that the industry has introduced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it has to be, and this is where it gets kind of difficult too, is from a development standpoint, it needs to be the employee and the manager together. And this is the hardest part about it, is on both sides, generally people will default to, well, what do I need to do to get a raise? What do I need to do to get to the next promotion? What do I need to do to get XYZ? It's all very, very short-term specific conversations, which is why people ride trends. Because then as long as they meet the trends and as long as they meet all that stuff, there's a chance that they're going to get promoted. There's a chance that they're going to get a raise. And, you know, the certifications that are needed by your organization might fall to you because you have the, you know, the prerequisite certification for the next certification, et cetera.
Yeah.
But there's no plan, and from a management perspective, and this is probably the hardest part of management and leadership, is understanding that the best thing you can do as a manager and leader is to create other leaders and to create people that are going to leave what you are doing and do something awesome themselves. Those are the long lasting impacts. If you can set that up so that they stay in your organization, but maybe move into a different role, maybe move into a leadership management role, maybe even become your boss. You know, if they can do that, then you've done what you need to do as a person. That's betterment for yourself, betterment for the person that you're dealing with, and everything else like that. Too often, managers just look at, well, you do this job really, really well, and replacing you would be hard. So we're just going to keep you in this role. Maybe we'll give you some more money, but we're just going to keep you in this role. I know you don't like that, but you know, it's good for us. It's good for the business. It's good for our customers. And then that's when the shock comes in of, well, that person is now given their 2-week notice and they're leaving the company because there's no pathway for them. There's no growth path. There's no anything. And you have to, that's a change, you know, in your approach to the world as a leader and manager. You have to put effort into understanding that stuff.
Yeah. And
too often people just don't prepare for stuff like that. They don't think it's a possibility. Like, one thing I have done, which I'm glad I did, somebody kind of walked me down that path a little bit, you know, early on in my management, you know, career, and sat down and thought, like, if this person gets this awesome opportunity to grow and be super, super great, what's my next step? Do I support them? Am I supportive? Am I a champion for them? And do I then start planning succession paths and everything else like that? That changed my mentality. When I got into roles where I had, you know, people who could move up into all different kinds of positions, then that became my plan. Is every single person I hired at an entry-level position, I was thinking, what is the fifth role they're going to have inside of our organization? How do I get them to that fifth role? Not how do I get them in and trained so that they're good right now? Because, that'll help. But,
and that's not to say that there aren't, like, there are, like, leadership is at all levels. Mm-hmm. And in the opposite of what you said, it's also okay. Like, one thing that we've done, we really invest in the development of our employees. Now, that's a hard ask for a smaller company, because we don't have, you know, a company like yours. You have an entire continent of where you can move people around, you know, like, well, not a
yeah, but if you think about it too, from a training perspective, the cost of training people, the more people you have, that goes up exponentially. And even with some of these certifications, like people shoot for the moon once you get a big company instead of like, and I get what you're saying about being able to move them into different positions or even different geos or even different everything else like that.
What I was going to say is what we've accepted is that if our growth doesn't keep up with the growth of our employees, we look at it like we're a development company then, and we will develop everyone that steps through this door. And if they happen to leave because an opportunity has been presented for them that we cannot match or provide, we're happy for them. Yeah. That's so in the opposite of trying to keep people, we've also accepted that we may not be able to keep up with how fast can develop people. And so it's a positive thing, like you said, that you've done your job. Creating new leaders and that development is...
Listening to both of you, I have a question. You know, Derek, obviously you've gained a position of trust and people know your mindset within your organization. Jared, you're a business owner and, you know, you set the tone for your organization. And I've always loved that you say, you know, our company is a professional development company that happens to do, you know, AV services, right? Like, I mean, you really think of it in that way. Do you think that in some organizations that ownership or, you know, C-suite, that they don't see their middle manager's role as professional development? They see their middle manager's role as delivering a result, and they don't necessarily... Do you think that's where some of the risk comes in for, you know, maybe a manager to take that personal, you know, that personal management approach, that they feel like they're not, you know, that's not what's there, and it's a risk for them, right? Like, if I focus on how do I get, you know, Jenny from point A to five roles down the line, and in the meantime, she's not doing her current job super well, you know, is management going to frown on me as not being able to facilitate the result they want? Do you think there's some fear of that within organizations
Keeps
people?
For sure. I mean, there's two things to that. There's an individual integrity thing in terms of how you approach your life and how you approach dealing with people and everything else like that, and how you look at growth. That, depending on who you are as an individual, is going to determine how you view things like that versus just, hey, we have to hit a sales goal, or hey, we have to hit a revenue percentage, or hey, we have to hit GP percentage, whatever. If you're managing purely by one of my favorite quotes in the world is by a guy named Ben Horowitz, is management purely by numbers is like painting by numbers. It's strictly for amateurs. And the way I look at that is management, numbers are great. Numbers are important. I mean, you can't have a business if your numbers aren't good. But if you're one percentage point off from what you thought you were going to be, but your people grew, you took care of customers, you gained a bunch of respect, awards, et cetera, in the industry you're in and everything else like that, and you're 1% less than what you thought you were going to be, you had a fantastic year. Yeah. Some people would look at that 1% and start looking at, okay, my managers need to go because they're not driving the results that I'm looking for. I expected plus one, not minus one. And so that also then comes from the incentive side of it. How are people incentivized as a leader? Are they incentivized, you know, is there a board? Are you a publicly traded company, et cetera? Are there metrics that you have to hit or the board's going to recommend you no longer have a job? That's really where the gut check comes in, because there are plenty of people in CEO type roles, in president type roles, et cetera, of companies that are publicly traded, have a board and are getting scrutinized left and right, who still stand up and can defend that minus 1% and have everybody be happy with it. And then there are those that are scared of it. And that's where it comes in, is who you are as a person determines the cultural effect that has downstream throughout your entire organization. If you are unable to have that level of integrity to recognize what is right, what drives your people, what keeps people moving in the right direction for your customers, the right vector, if you will, because it's not just about the direction. It's also about the pull that you have, positive, negative, et cetera, across your organization and what direction that pushes you in. That's really where the difference comes in. The problem for all businesses is what employees want, and even what C-level executives want for themselves, is not exactly what is represented as good for business. So business schools, MBAs, et cetera, represent things very, very differently than, say, what's been proven over the years by a lot of really good businesses. You know, you mentioned Jim Collins, Good to Great. Every business he put in there as successful versus all the ones that he compared them against that weren't successful in the same industry, they all had good people who were highly educated, that had good experience, and, you know, followed even the companies that they compared as negative. They followed generally known good business practices. Yep. You know, they just weren't successful over time because they focus exclusively on certain things without having a diverse and well-rounded approach to their business.
Yeah. I call that, like, to what you asked there, Mark, like, it's kind of the understanding of, like, your vision sustainability, right? So kind of like what Derek was talking about, when you at the end of a quarter or at the end of your year and you were that 1% off, but like he said, you achieved a record of milestones outside of the KPI matrix, you know, what's the long-term vision? Did we move forward towards that long-term vision? And an analogy I use is that, I don't know if like, to me, leadership is like, it's like carrying a tray of drinks. And I don't know if either of you have ever served, if either of you have bartended, waited, you know, the secret to it is, and I tell people this, I used to bartend, and I would tell people the secret to carrying a tray of drinks is actually not looking at the drinks. You just look forward and you look where you're going to the table where you're taking them, and your hand will kind of do the rest. And you might spill a little bit, but what happens is if you're looking at it, you will see every little shift and pivot, and then you'll try to compensate every little shift and pivot, and then you overcompensate, and next thing you know, you're spilling drinks, right? But if you can accept that, yeah, I might spill a little bit because these cups are really full, but I see where I'm going. I'm going to get this tray of drinks there, and everyone's going to be happy because that's your vision. That's where you're going, right? And so, yeah, if you're looking down and you're trying to pivot on every little misstep or, you know, shake of a cup, and you're gonna spill, man. You're gonna spill.
Yeah, that reminds me of, you know, driver's ed, you know, when I was 16 years old. Like, you know, if you drive by the lines 4 feet in front of you, you're gonna be to the left side of the lane, the right side of the lane, the left side of the lane, the right side of the lane. But if you look,
yep,
you know, where you're going off in the distance, look at the car that's, you know, 20 car lengths in front of you in the same lane and just follow them. You're going to stay straight, and you're not going to vary a lot. You smooth things out. When you talked about waiting tables, I did wait tables. If you talk about looking at where you were going, which I did all the time. One of the weird side effects of boxing is you get some tunnel vision on what's in front of you.
Sure.
You don't want to get distracted when somebody's trying to punch you in the face. So I used to have to tell people in my restaurant, like, if I'm walking through the restaurant quickly with something in my hands and it looks like I don't see you, I don't. Like, because I used to just run straight into people. Like, I'm going there. And if you happen to cross my path and just think that, oh, like, Mark sees me, he'll slow down. Like, no, that's not going to happen. I'm actually going to step on you. I'll be very sad. I'll be very apologetic about it. But I just don't see you. I'm so sorry. Sometimes I get a little bit.
The other thing about Good to Great too, Derek, that you brought up was that the other thing is the comparison companies were good companies. And when they hit their stride, it was typically because they had that amazing level 5 leadership. And then that level 5 leadership left.
Yep.
And then that company collapsed. And so what the premise there, right, is like, in the great companies, everybody is a level 5 leader, right? Everybody gets the vision. Everyone rows together. Everyone wants everybody to develop.
And you're developing your people multi-stream back, everybody, all, you know, everywhere.
Everybody's on the bus.
You're investing in making sure that that the core principles of what you're talking about and what you want the company to be about are what are constantly addressed.
Yeah.
Stuff's going to change. Business is going to change. What's capable, what's technologically capable, what even real estate changes and everything, all that other stuff, all that stuff changes. If you have built your company around the right principles that align with what your vision is and align with what you're trying to accomplish, and everybody in your company knows them backwards and forwards, knows what they mean, and you live them, you will make it through change. And that's the part that becomes a little bit more difficult. For me, I love understanding process to like the most minute detail. And people didn't understand it at first when I first came into management, that I just asked a lot of questions.
Sure.
And my reason for it was, know your process so well that you know where you can break it and not break your company.
Mm.
And so, you know what, if I pull this lever this way instead of this way, we're still going to get this stuff accomplished. Yeah, there's going to be some little bumps along the way, but we're still going to get this accomplished because your customers are going to provide you that lever pull in the wrong direction regularly. And so you need to know that if you're pulling it in the wrong direction, how much collateral damage is that going to cause inside of your company, and how much more work are people going to do? Some things, it's not even going to be that big of a deal. And so people will get so hamstrung on, well, this is our process. Okay, great. Throw your process away for this instance and do it this way. Because in this way, you gain a customer that's going to spend 100% year over year on top of what they've done with you for the next 10 years. Or you can try to make them conform to your practice, and they will work with you for 1 year, and then they're going to go find a different provider. And then you just lost out on 12 years worth of business for 1 year's worth of sticking to your process. You have to understand what are processes that can't break. Like, this is something we can't break. Everything else is flexible, and you have to know just how far you can flex it. And so that's where you have to check with people too, because one thing that I'll regularly do is if I know something's going to go down a path that we're going to have to flex something, or we're going to have to change our process a little bit, I'll call an internal meeting real quick and talk with everybody and say, okay, this is what we're going to have to do to make work. What is going to break because of that? Ask your people that. Ask them to tell you what's going to break. Ask them, because they'll tell you things like, well, that means I'm going to have to work an extra hour on this day, and on that day, I'm supposed to pick up my kids. Okay, how do we prevent that from happening? Then that's where the living it principle comes in. You're finding out how you can do things and still afford for your people their lives, and afford for your people their ability to do what they need to do. Because the second that you start taking stuff like that away, just for a project and just for XYZ, everybody knows you're a short-term thinker. And if you're a short-term thinker, they know that all it takes is the next short-term thing and you're changing your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hard, right? Because that causes instability, which is something that people don't typically deal well with. Right. I mean, I remember when I came in, when you said you asked a lot of questions, I did that in my current role. I came in and I was talking to quite a few people, and we did all these little cross-functional interviews. And I told my people, I'm like, my job is to make sure that you can reach next level while doing all the things that you like. You know, like, I want to preserve everything you like about your role, and help you, get rid of the things that you don't, so you can be more productive. And that's my job. My job isn't to change the way that you work or to take away the things that you enjoy. And so, looking at that, like you said, then you start to look at, okay, well, maybe they're getting that satisfaction from this task now, but if that task did have to change hands or go somewhere else because of process, is there a way that I could still provide that feel good or that personal reward they were getting from doing that in this new way? And so it's very, very interesting, that whole juggle. Well, for anybody who wants to read it, I'm sorry, I was going to mention this article real quick because I didn't actually give the name. and we got a hard stop coming up, so I want to make sure that I throw it out there for anybody The article that you shared on LinkedIn was in Forbes. It says what you're getting wrong about professional development. And, you know, although we didn't go point by point through it, most of the things we talked about are in here. But I think one that it was kind of an overarching theme of everything we talked about today is what it says in here is that, you know, the training, the employee has to see the training as being about them and not about being about the company. Right. Like you can't train somebody on something that they know is just for the benefit of the company and have them invested in the process of that change and growth, because it means nothing personally to them. They don't see it as valuable to them outside of your organization. And so I
mean, it's also about,
it's
also about the professional development of them understanding that they can start help reaching out on what they want to learn. And that is where you get the most consistent buy-in on that type of process. If somebody believes that they'll only get approved for things that help the company, then when you get into one-on-one syncs, when you get into goal setting and everything else like that with individuals, they're just going to regurgitate what they know you're going to approve.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get any different. You're not going to innovate, because if you have the same people with the same certifications doing the same things over and over again to try and create efficiencies, yeah, you're probably going to get pretty efficient. But then when the world changes, you're not ready.
Yeah.
And when you're not ready, you're now doing a disservice to everyone that works for your company, because now you either have to pause your business, which who can pause their business, especially right now in a pandemic, to get ready, or you have to try and get them to get ready while also doing the jobs that they were doing before. You're asking an enormous task of individuals at a time when somebody might just be looking for them and might offer them $1 more an hour, or might even offer them the same exact price, but they offer them the potential for growth that you're not offering.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the huge elephant in the room. I'll tell you, every time I've left a role, it's been mostly for challenge. You know, every once in a while, there's a little bit of a cultural thing going on, but it hasn't been because of money. I don't think I've ever left a role just for money. It's always been, you know, there's a path or there's a feeling. It's one of those two things. So
for me, it's same thing. For me, you know, the last three roles that I've had in my career didn't exist before I took them on. So I helped create them. I helped define what they were going to be. And I also walked into a complete world of uncertainty, like just no knowledge of what it was going to be. Nobody to even speak to about it. Just kind of like, here you go. Here's you figure it out. Now, personally, by now, the fact that this is my third role doing this, you know, where I'm just walking into complete uncertainty, completely brand new position. And, you know, there are no processes. I'm creating them as we go and everything else like that. I'm more comfortable in that world now, which also makes me, in the world of changing technology, I can adapt to it way faster than most other people, just because of the fact that that's what I've been doing for the last 6 years, has been adapting to just uncertainty and change. That's not inherent to everybody. And those are the things that we kind of got to foster amongst people is building the safety net to deal with uncertainty and change and provide that pathway for our individuals and everything else like that. And then the other side of it is employees need to know, and people who work as individual contributors and are not necessarily in management roles, they need to know that go explore and start looking at things that are going to be of interest to you and necessarily not a part of your current role right now, but might be something that you want to do later, and then start pushing for it.
Yeah.
You know, yeah there's going to be a whole bunch of people that are going to get Cisco networking certs because IT and AV are all together. Okay, there's gonna be a lot of people that do that. How many of them are gonna go and do like Lean Six Sigma, or gonna do ITIL certification, or gonna do stuff like that, or gonna do, you know, Microsoft fundamentals, or do any of those things? Those are huge things to help push your career and your company forward together. And, you know, looking for those opportunities that match your skill set, what you wanna do, and then start pushing your company and your manager and everything else like that to get to that position. And then as a manager and company, being receptive to that and going, okay, they're bringing something to me that I didn't know that they would be interested in, that, hey, is a really That's cool thing. Want. Why don't we explore it? You know?
Yeah.
This whole conversation, I can't help but think of that meme that we've all seen where it's like the CFO says, what if we spend all this money investing in our people and they leave us? And the CEO says, what if we don't and they stay, you know?
Yep.
That's all I can think about is, yeah, you just end up with a bunch of, if you don't make that investment, you will end up with exactly what you're describing, very complacent, task-driven, here to collect the check kind of team that isn't innovative. They're not driven. They don't, you know, they don't buy into the company vision. And anyways, yeah.
This creativity. You're missing creativity, because the more... Yeah. buckets you can pull information from, the more creative you're going to get to offer solutions for your customers and services that you can sell and everything else like that.
Yeah.
If you're tunnel vision on one thing, you're only going to be able to deliver that one thing. And the second somebody asks you for something else, you're gonna be like, yeah, that's somebody else's job. Yep. Okay. Well, now you've just limited your life. You've limited your career and you've limited potentially your company depending on what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, I want to respect Derek's time. I think we could talk about this for a couple hours probably. But Derek, thank you so much for coming on. I'm glad I always look at your shares on social, because you are always sharing something unique and different. And I love the perspective you bring. So I really appreciate you taking some time to sit with us and talk through some of it. And hopefully some folks got some good nuggets of information out of it for sure.
Well, thank you for having me. And the thing I love most, especially about social media, is the ability to learn from everybody else too. You know, everybody else provides unique perspectives. And Mark and Jared, you guys, you know, we've all seen stuff that we've posted and been involved in. And hopefully what I get out of, you know, you guys and what you guys, you know, post is what others get. And it drives people to explore things and everything else like that. That's the best part of social media. That gets away from the worst parts of social media that you don't want to get into. So
no doom scrolling.
What do they say? The best part of social media is that everyone gets to share. And the worst part of social media is everyone gets to share.
Yep. Exactly.
Yep. Completely.
Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us on Daybreak this week. Thanks to Derek Kelly from AVISPL for joining us. Thanks, as always, to Jared, the Canadian Hillman. Jared with the good hair, as he's called in his neighborhood. All right, guys.
You realize now I'm going to remember that forever.
Yes, Jared with the good hair.
That's exactly what I'm going to associate him with.
Jared with the good hair. Awesome, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next time. Take care. You know, man.